Here we come, walking down the street. We get the funniest looks from everyone we meet.
Hey, hey, we're the monkeys, and people say we're monkeying around. But we're too busy singing to put anybody down.
We go where we want to, do what we like to do. We only time to get restless, there's always something new.
Hey, hey, we're the monkeys, and people say we're monkey around. But we're too busy.
That's right, we are the monkeys. My name is Dana Pretzer. You are listening to Scared Monkeys Radio for Tuesday, February 27th, 2007. Our webpage is located at www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio. There you can listen to the show live. You can download podcasts, hear my daily commentary, or do whatever you like. We're also on satellite W3957 on the 4D TV Motorola receiver, channel 46 on Trust Cable, and wherever else you can pick us up. Welcome. Tonight, Laferne Watkins and Pixie Monroe will join me from the Museum of Radio and Television in Beverly Hills, California. I'm so jealous. We're going to be talking about a project that Pixie's working on. She's a casting director for Monroe Casting and Production Services, where stars will be jumping, parachute jumping, with the Army Golden Knights. Laferne Watkins is the Community Affairs President for the Association of Women in Radio and Television, Southern California chapter, and we're going to be talking about women in radio and television and broadcasting in general. You get a real kick out of that. After that, Clint Van Zandt, former FBI agent and author, will be here. We're going to be talking about the Clayton Moore case. That's that young boy who was kidnapped. Clint's going to be talking about school bus safety issues. How do we protect our children at a school bus stop? Geez, just when you think you've heard everything, right at a school bus stop, someone comes along and snatches a kid. And how brave this young Clayton Moore was to escape just using a safety pin. We're also going to talk about that new movie, Zodiac. And I'm going to ask the question, is the media glorifying serial killers? That's tonight here on the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back with Laferne and Pixie.
Return to me, oh my dear, I'm so lonely. Hurry back, oh my love, hurry back, I am yours. Return to me, for my heart wants you only. Hurry home, won't you please hurry home to my heart. My darling, if I hurt you, I'm sorry. Forgive me, and please say you are mine. Return to me, please come back, bella mia.
Okay, we're back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer. It's my pleasure tonight to have two gals on the phone with me from, get this, I'm sitting in Saskatchewan where it's minus 25. There's a wind chill of minus whatever. You know when they talk about brass monkeys freezing their, well, I saw one today. But these two gals are at the Museum of Television and Radio in Beverly Hills. Talk about being jealous. I am as jealous as you can get. But, you know, the show must go on. Pixie Monroe is a casting director, and she's from Monroe Casting and Production Services, Inc. Laferne Watkins is from the Southern California Broadcasters Association. She's the Community Affairs President, Association of Women in Radio and Television, Southern California Chapter. Boy, that's a mouthful. Ladies, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm out of breath.
Thank you, Dana.
I'm out of breath now doing that introduction,
no,
so I'll just let things.
Imagine me saying all that.
I'll just let things go on here. No, seriously, it's my pleasure to have you on the program, and I am jealous as hell to know that you're down at the Museum of Television and Radio in Beverly Hills. I was looking at the webpage and searching around there, and boy, that would be some place to go, and I will get there. Eventually, and we'll talk about the museum in a few minutes. Pixie, I do want to start with you. There's something special that you're working on with some stars and the Army Golden Knights and some parachuting. Tell us about that.
Well, that's right, Dana. I'm actually working with the U.S. Army Golden Knights parachute team, and we're preparing a jump for tomorrow for celebrities. They're going to take a leap of faith with the U.S. Army. Some of our guests include Pamela Bach Hasselhoff, who is an actress producer. She's known for Young and Restless and Baywatch Hawaii, as well as being David Hasselhoff's ex-wife.
Right.
Dwight Hicks, who was a two-time Super Bowl champion, the San Francisco 49ers. He's also been seen on How I Met Your Mother, The OC, The ER, X-Files, and Armageddon. And ironically, I just cast him as the president playing the Dennis Caper character in an award-winning short film, 07, that's getting a lot of festival recognition right now. And Isabella St. James, who played Bernie Mac, and she's also been in Playboy and the Sharon Osbourne show. We've got lots of other exciting people that are unconfirmed. Guests can include the CSI, the unit, and Stargate Atlantis are among those who are contemplating taking a leap of faith tomorrow morning.
Wow, a leap of faith it is. I don't know if I'd be able to do that, but it's certainly something to support. Yeah, I wouldn't either. It wouldn't be. It's something to support the military. When are we going to be able to see that, Pixie?
Well, the picture should be up shortly after the jump, probably tomorrow afternoon. We'll have some pictures up. And then the press will be releasing it right after that. So probably by tomorrow afternoon, we'll start seeing pictures from their jump.
Okay, Laferne, the Association of Women and in Radio and Television, Southern California chapter. We look at radio and television today, and please correct me if I'm wrong. It's still a male-dominated medium. We hear about Katie Couric and those that are female and are trying to establish themselves as being power brokers in the industry. You think of Barbara Walters when she first, I'm old enough to remember when she became an anchor of the nightly news and all the controversy that caused. Tell us a little bit about the Association of Women in Radio and Television.
Well, AWRT is open for both men and women, and we do promote trying to break the glass ceiling as it is. And yes, there are still a lot of males at the top of the ranks in radio and television. And what we do is we help groom and the students in broadcasting, and we also help encourage people that are already in the industry in their career with their career objectives, and just to improve the quality of broadcast programming and the image of women that is depicted in radio and television. It's a wonderful organization, and for myself, I've gotten a great amount of support through this organization and in my career.
Let's talk a little bit about radio and TV 10, 15 years ago compared to today. We have satellite broadcasts. We have radio, which I consider to be strange at best. In the evenings, you hear a lot of spaceships and politics and sadly a lot of porn, but you don't have the old style type of talk show, a la Larry King, on the air anymore. Radio has become strange, to say the least. It's become more open, and people, are they still tuning in, or are they starting to tune out?
Oh, most definitely. They're still tuning in. There has been a lot of change within the industry. Speaking or coming from Los Angeles, we're the number one radio market in in the United States, but we are also merging with the new media. There's just so much new media that's happening that all the industries are like coming together, and that's one thing that we're doing. The AWRT SoCal chapter, we're having a new media panel, emerging media panel next month, March 28th, where we're going to have all these professionals to tell us what's happening in the industry, to keep us on top of the new media and what's happening with radio itself and, again, television. So I think with the industry, we always have to be one step ahead and continue to change. And though it's not like it was, you know, 50 years ago, there's still a sense of community when it comes to radio. And I think that's one thing that people, when they tune in, there's a sense of community. People are so spread out and in various communities and don't have that one-on-one contact. And turning on the radio is a way to do that.
Let's talk a little bit about, and maybe Pixie, you can take this one, the media today. Vice President Cheney's life was almost taken when a suicide bomber blew himself up, with his target being the vice president. Watching the cable channels this morning, as I do, and surfing around the net, you see little broadcast about that, but yet we still have nonstop Anna Nicole, and I'm not trying to make light of it, coverage about where she'll be buried, and correspondence and satellite trucks, TV, radio, you name it, everybody nonstop, but yet we're hearing little about an attempt on the life of the Vice President of the United States. What's going on? Is this really what people want to hear, or is it the broadcasters themselves trying to make a decision, you know, if it bleeds, it leads. Nobody likes Cheney anyway, so let's talk about Anna Nicole because people are fascinated with that.
Yeah, well, this is Laferne. I know that they when people hear that, they're like, oh, what's happening with Anna Nicole or whatever, but there is a sense of sensationalism and people trying to be distracted from what the reality is. Well, what is good news?
Right.
You know, so if a news story has to lead with that to get the information out that, you know, Cheney's life has been, you know, in, has been challenged, well, yeah, that's pretty sad. But I think that's one thing we can do is help change that and not make it such a broad range of, oh, the celebrities, and have real sufficient news and that are on the airways.
Right. And I know in my career, I'm trying to make a difference, and that's the most important thing.
You are making a difference.
I am making a difference. Excuse me. And I know that a couple months ago, I went to an A-list actor, lost their father, and I was appalled to see the media hanging out of the trees to take pictures at this funeral, and it was just heartbreaking to me, not only as a person that was inside the entertainment industry, but just as an individual. It was heartbreaking that person could not be present in the moment and just allowed the dignity and respect to give final tribute to his father. And I was devastated. So I guess, you know, for me, what I like to do is take it and make a positive spin and make sure that what I'm doing is making a difference and that it does have a positive spin on it.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, and you're right. Positive spin, and I think most people want that positive spin and want to be able to see that the paparazzi are only in this for the money, seeing the stars and the cameras in their faces the way that it is. And I know the old adage is you shouldn't be a star if you don't want your picture taken. But it's a little bit different than that, Pixie. As a casting, as a casting director or casting person, Hollywood casting agent, when you bring somebody in for a role, or you're looking at somebody and trying to cast them into a role, do you consider today the price of fame more than you would have, say, 5-10 years ago? Because the industry seems to be so much different. We have so-called stars that really are only stars in the media because they're not doing any TV, they're not doing any movies, but there's sure a lot of pictures of them. We'll use Paris Hilton, I know you're going to get mad at me about that, as an example, but they really haven't done anything else. They're just stars because people like to look at them.
Right. Well, I think you take all of that into consideration, but I like to put people in that are going to make a positive impact and, you know, be role models and be people that I, as a parent, as, you know, somebody who's been on both sides of the entertainment industry, I really want to keep a well-grounded view of what is out there. And that's where things, I'm on the committee for the Entertainment Industries Council, which is accurate depiction of alcohol, tobacco, drug use, and other related topics through Washington. And that takes the military, the government, with the medical professions, and mixes it with Hollywood to kind of come up with that middle ground of what is working and what people in the American audiences are watching and viewing, so that what they're seeing is accurate and it is not, you know, glorified and out there in bad ways.
If you're just tuning in, LaFern Watkins and Pixie Monroe are joining me from the TV and Radio Broadcast Museum in Beverly Hills. Like I say, I'm so jealous because I'm sitting here in the frozen tundra, but I'm getting a real kick out of talking to them. And we're talking about the entertainment industry, women in radio and television. And my next question goes to you, LaFern. Let's talk about a media code of conduct, being part of the Southern California Broadcasters Association. We've seen more attacks on the media in the last little while. I use the Nancy Grace story as an example, with her interviewing a young mother whose child was missing, and then the family turning around and suing her because she allegedly asked too tough a question. Should there be a code of conduct, so to speak, for the media? I know there is, but is this something now where broadcasters in radio or TV are just trying too hard to get the story?
I think that's a very fine line, because if you're a respectable broadcast person, you want to get all the information out that you can to make a difference or bring light to whatever situation that they're talking about. I didn't hear the story, see the interview with Nancy Grace, and I can't speak on that intelligently, but I know that as a broadcast professional, it's up to each of us to maintain that sense of dignity. And there's so many great correspondents out there that are doing that hold their right of wanting to bring great information out there. And I think the audience knows when people are being nasty, and it will show in the ratings. But a code of conduct, there might be an unwritten rule for a code of conduct, but again, the industry's changing so much, and it's all about ratings and,
and who's on top and the stockholders, and there's just so much ingrained in it, and people are trying to keep their jobs. And unfortunately, the controversy helps keep people's jobs because, you know, people will tune into that.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I was going to say that people love controversy. That's why they're watching so much of the Anna Nicole stuff that's on TV today. Pixie, you have somebody come to you and say they haven't had a job for a while. They're in the industry, but they've been out of work for some time. And they'll tell you that, just give me anything. I want to do anything. I want to be back in the public so the public see me and have me do something. Maybe this is a lousy example I'm giving you right now, but as a casting person or production services, what do you do to help your clients stay in the media, in the public's eye, so to speak?
Well, part of my job is getting to know the talent. I get to take, you know, I love my job, by the way. I get to take the writer's words and the director's visions with the production company's money and mix it all together and find the talent that brings everything into one. I'm kind of like the Julie on the Love Boat. I get to put it all together. And so that's the most fun. And so if someone came to me and said that, you know, I think, first of all, I would want to ask them what they were passionate about, because as a casting director, part of my job is to bring out the best in people and have them depict the image that they really want to depict. So I would ask them what kinds of things they were interested in, what way they wanted their career to go, and then, you know, try to fit the mold with the contacts that I've already got in place. And if not, go out and, you know, see if I could help find the right vehicle for them in the entertainment industry. And that's one of the things I love, is the people contact within the industry. And now it's spreading out. I've got lots and lots of great friends all over the world. And, you know, it's nice. I'm a people person. I'm definitely not an introvert.
Well, you have to be in this line of work for sure. Laferne, again, we're going to run out of time here real quick. Like I said, ladies, this time goes by real fast, and I'm getting a real kick out of having you both on here. I want to talk a little bit about the museum. I want to be there, but I can't. But I'm looking at pictures on the Internet as we speak. Tell us a little bit about this museum. It's quite a place.
Yeah, it's so beautiful, so wonderfully structured here in sunny California. Sunny, warm, I'm not rubbing that in.
Yeah.
But we are sitting in the Candy and Aaron Spelling, we're right next to the Candy and Aaron Spelling reception area, Aaron Spelling. So it's nice. They have a lot of wonderful programs. And speaking of wonderful programs, they have a class they teach, which is old-style radio, and they air an old-style radio, which is a great program. We came down here and watched them produce the show. They have kids from around the area come, and they write the scripts for them. They have the old sound effects. They have the script writer that writes these stories of, you know, kind of like The Shadow and all of that. And it's really great radio. They also have the John Paley Film Festival coming up, and a lot of programs that honor the people in the industry and they help the industry with what has brought it to this place right now. So they exemplify that. I know a couple months ago, I went to a gala honoring Jerry Bruckheimer, and it's just wonderful events they put on. Terry Lynn, who helped us here, she's the PR manager, I believe is her correct title. And she was on the board for AWRT SoCal and has helped us extremely a lot. So she's a great, wonderful person to know here at MTR. You could log on for to mtr.org for more information.
Pixie, here's a here's a question for you. Mm-hmm. I don't want to leave you left out here.
A mom
and a dad have their child in acting lessons, and they've done whatever they can to try and teach their child the business, for lack of a better term, and they think that they've got themselves a star. We're gonna do some programming here in the next month or so about children who want to become stars or you know, childhood celebrities. What's your advice to that mom and dad that's out there right now who thinks that their child should be in the movies?
Well, first and foremost, I would say don't do it until you get a copy of Stan Livingston's new DVD series called Journey for Kids. And it's unbelievable. It has all of the legendary directors, producers, people in the industry giving their advice on bringing kids into the industry. And it's almost like a mentorship DVD. I would say make sure not to spend a ton of money. Watch out for gimmicks. Make sure that the people that they connect their child with are reputable. Go with them to their auditions, to their interviews. You know, be mindful and let the children be who they are. And let their personalities come out naturally. Don't force it. But just be mindful and very protective of their kid, because if there's a lot of people, unfortunately, out there who will take that desire to stardom and exploit it, and especially in children. And so I think for me, as the parent of a child actor, that was one of the things I had to be the most cautious of, was that my child's best interest. I was still the best advocate for my child. And so I needed to follow my gut instincts and the little red flags that are tugging away at me. If something doesn't, if it seems too good to be true, it's probably not true. and just to be sure that I dot my I's and cross my T's and, you know, make sure that the people that I'm putting my child's career with are going to be able to follow through on what they say.
Exactly. There are a lot of scams out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We've all seen the TV shows and the documentaries about child actors and what they've gone through and what they haven't. You see Danny Bonaducci today, who is on every cable channel that he can. But what I like about Danny Bonaducci is he speaks his mind, and he may do it too directly sometimes, I guess, but he does speak his mind and tells it like it is. LaFern, before I let you go, and again, I really thank both of you for coming on the program this evening, tell us a little bit about what's next for your organization.
Well, again, AWRT SoCal is having a emerging media panel March 28th, and we're also having the Genie Awards. And also the commercial panel in early April with Kristen Denhart, who did the Super Bowl commercial,
right.
The Super Bowl commercial finalist for
Checkout Girl.
Yeah, the Checkout Girl.
The Doritos commercial.
Yeah, so she's great. And we also have the Genie Awards, which is our annual fundraiser. We're honoring Doris Roberts,
right.
Is one of our honorees of Everyone Loves Raymond, among others, here in Southern California. So we're very excited about the year ahead.
Listen, it's great.
Dana, can I say one more thing?
Absolutely.
About Danny Bonaducci.
Yep.
He just won a PRISM Award for Breaking Bonaducci. And that was one of the most powerful moments of the PRISM Awards this past year, was watching him receive his award for his honesty and being, you know, being, letting the world watch him go through a very difficult period of time.
Yep.
And it was a powerful, powerful, powerful moment.
it takes a lot of guts, and he definitely has them. I give him all the credit in the world, because I don't know if I'd be able to do that. Listen, ladies, thank you. I really appreciate you spending a half an hour with us tonight on the program. If you could just stay on the air, I'll talk to you in a second.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
We got a thing or two to tell you all. Now this lady may have stumbled, but she ain't never failed. If our enemies don't believe that, they can all go straight to hell. We gonna put our feet back on the paths of righteousness and live. God bless America again. And you never did think that it ever would happen again. Neither really good did you. You never did think that we'd ever get together again. Well, we dang sure fooled you, walking real proud, and we're talking real loud again. Here in America, you never did think that it ever would happen again. From the sound up in Long Island, out to San Francisco Bay, and everything that's in between them is our home. Now, we may have done just a little bit of fighting amongst ourselves, but y'all outside people best leave us alone.
Okay, we're back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name is Dana Pretzer. A 13-year-old Tampa, Florida area youth, Clayton Moore, was allegedly kidnapped at gunpoint 9 a.m. on Friday morning as he waited with other students for their school bus to arrive. Moore was described as the closest youth to the believed abductor. That abductor is now wanted by the police. We've all seen the story on the news of the young boy, Clayton Moore, who was able to escape using a safety pin, I believe. I thought I'd bring on my friend Clint Van Zandt tonight, former FBI agent and author, to talk about safety of children. Of course, if you go to his webpage, livesecure.org, you'll see there's a free DVD there with lots of tips for how to protect your children. But who would think that at a bus stop, a child is that vulnerable for a predator like happened in the Moore case? Clint, how are you?
Hey, good evening, Dana. Just fine, thank you.
This is something that, it seems like every week there's something on the news that shocks the heck out of us. Some predator out there grabs a child now from a bus stop, a young brave boy who was able to escape. He may not have been able to escape. You were able to escape your case many, many years ago, and I thought I'd bring you on tonight to talk about this case and some tips about how to protect our children, especially at school bus stops.
Well, you know, you're right, and my heart goes out to this young man and every other, you know, child who goes through this. As you just suggested, I was taken by a predator when I was 7 years old, and I was able to escape, just barely escape from him at that time. And in my case, never told anyone because, you know, I thought I was wrong. I was 7 years old. I made a mistake. I made a mistake by not telling my parents. But when we get to the Clay Moore case, what unfortunately is happening today is that we find a lot of predators that are looking for children at school bus stops, and either the path that the children would take to school, to the bus stop, or from the bus stop back to their home again. We find the predators are stalking and identifying children in that way. And, you know, that's the scary thing. We think that once we get our children, you know, out of the house in the morning, that they're going to be safe, they're going to be take the bus, they're going to be at school, they're going to be back home again, we think, okay, they're going to be safe, they're going to be protected. And the reality is there are predators out there that are looking at those areas. And the challenge comes that how do we protect bus stops? Well, you know, we always, you and I in our careers in law enforcement, we know that after the fact, there's a lot of things we do. In this area in Florida, where young Clay Moore was taken at the bus stop, well, now police officers are assigned to the different bus stops. Well, that's going to last about a week or 2 weeks, something like that, because we just don't have a finite number of police officers. We've got to put them other places than bus stops. Parents are trying to come together and say, well, you know, can we have a parent at the bus stop every day? Well, you know, 50% of kids, like when I was a kid, my parents were divorced when I was young. 50% of the children, at least in the United States, are living in split homes where the parents have divorced. Others, if you're fortunate enough to have a two-parent family, there are economic situations today require obviously one, if not both parents work. So then the question comes, how do we cover the bus stops? Do we get all the parents who have children at the bus stop, and do we take turns? Is that a revolving kind of babysitting? And babysitting, you know, we say, well, we're going to do that for our grade school kids, but what about junior high school? What about high school? Are kids going to want us sitting there at that bus stop? So there's a lot of challenges here that after the fact, every community and every parent has to reassess that potential threat that their children face in a situation like this.
Well, you're right. It's a potential threat, and where does it end and where does it begin? A parent or a policeman on every bus stop, a parent or a policeman in every schoolyard, there has to be more to it than that. We don't have enough parents, and we don't have enough policemen. Some reports show that between 1.3 and 1.8 million children are reported missing each year. This case was actually a ransom, kidnap for ransom, which is very rare. Let's talk a little bit before we get into the actual school bus stop safety tips that you have. Let's talk about missing children and the case of actually one being kidnapped for ransom, how rare that is.
You know, and I think you've hit upon it too. That is very rare. And, you know, there's multiple reasons why that doesn't happen, be it the United States or Canada or any other first world country, is that, you know, and again, I can speak from my experience as an FBI agent, that between the FBI, sheriff's departments, police departments, I mean, these are cases, as you well know from your experience, that we throw everything we have. If there's ever a kidnapping, especially of a child, you take every absolute resource that you have and you throw at that case, because you want to solve that kidnapper, you want to solve the kidnapping, you want to get that kidnapper, you want to do something about it. So, number one, you've got law enforcement, just they pull out all the stops if there ever is a kidnapping. Number two, it is a crime that really doesn't pay. The reality is, it's just like an extortion or a kidnapping when you're trying to get money for something. The Achilles heel is always the payoff. Mm-hmm. How do you make the payoff? How do you make the drop? In this particular case, we know the kidnapper, in the case of Clay Moore, the kidnapper wrote a note and said if he wasn't paid a sum of money, that he would leave the child where he was and he might die. Well, of course, we know that Clay was left duct taped to a tree out in the middle of nowhere, and that he was able to use the safety pin, almost like a MacGyver type of tool, and cut his way free and get away. But this kidnapper was intimating either pay the money or the boy's going to die. But of course, the challenge is, how did that kidnapper plan on collecting the money? Whether, you know, there are just stupid ways. I've had kidnappings before where the kidnapper wanted the money dropped on a set of train tracks, figuring that if there was a train going one way or the other, that the police and FBI would all be on one side of the tracks watching the money, and as the train went by, he'd come from the other side, grab the money, and escape. Well, that's
exactly
stupid.
Right.
And in that particular case, of course, we got the two kidnappers very quickly. There's been some creative ones. One that I was involved in overseas, where there was a kidnapping, and then the kidnapper demanded that the money be placed in an ATM, and that a ATM card with the code on it be brought to a location. And then there was a series of messages that directed where you should go. Well, when you get to this location, long story short, you eventually get to this basket on the ground, and you turn the basket over, and there's a carrier pigeon there with a little holster, like, on its leg. And the instructions are to put the ATM card in the holster on the carrier pigeon's leg, and then to release the bird. and let that fly, which, of course, it did, to the frustration of police officers. But again, it's an ATM card. We can stop it. We can block it. We know where that's going to be used. So that is always going to be the challenge in anyone trying to pull off a kidnapping in a first world country. Now, when you get down into Mexico, Central, South America, kidnappings are a cottage industry. And in Iraq, we have Iraqi citizens that are kidnapped on a daily basis, and their families are forced to pay money to get back again. Well, of course, the Iraqi cops are so busy ducking bombs going off that it's pretty hard for them to go out and work a kidnapping. But in most progressive societies where you have some stabilization of government, where you have a good law enforcement response, kidnapping is a crime that really doesn't pay.
This is a brave young boy, Clayton Moore. Again, like you say, did a MacGyver type of escape with a safety pin. That isn't always the case in something like this. Parents can't count on their children being able to get away in a situation like this. So I thought you and I would discuss some safety issues, some tips that maybe you have. Again, I encourage listeners, go to livesecure.org, and Clint has a free DVD there with more of these tips. Let's talk about those, Clint.
Sure. You know, for school bus safety issues, there's a lot of things that we as parents and caregivers need to think about. You know, number one, as you and I talked about earlier, having an adult at the bus stop. And we realize that's a challenge. It's not always possible. But, of course, that's the best case scenario. Number two, as a parent, you need to know the path that your child's going to take to and from their home to the school bus and back again. If something happens in between, you need to know what route. We want to make sure our children avoid, if they can, taking shortcuts through the woods, through an alley, through a park, through any other area where they could be alone and out of sight, where a predator could identify that as a route that a child would take, stake it out, and then grab that child. In our neighborhood, we need to identify safe houses on the way to and from the bus stop, so that our children know if something happens, here's a neighbor, they're home most of the time, and if something happens, you can run right to that house to get some help if you want to. You know, things that I've advocated for years is that children, no matter their age, I mean, we shouldn't put their names on their backpack or their lunch bucket, whatever it is. All that allows a predator to do is see the name Tom on a backpack and say, "Hey, Tommy, come here. Your dad told me to give you this money." And the kid thinks, "Well, he knows my name." Well, he knows it because you got a backpack on.
Yep.
You know, if your child feels concerned for their safety, we need to encourage our children. They need to tell us. They need to tell the bus driver. They need to tell somebody at school. If our children see a suspicious vehicle, if we see it, driving back and forth by a bus stop or through our neighborhood, write the license number down. Give it to the school. Give it to the police department, sheriff's office. We need to tell our children if they're waiting at a bus stop or any place else and a vehicle drives up and the driver you don't know beckons you to come close to the car. Don't do it. You don't have to do it. If the person says they can't hear, that's too bad. That's their problem. We don't want our child close enough to an unknown vehicle where they can get grabbed. And in the case of Clay Moore, the abductor drives up in a pickup truck and starts to engage these children. As you say, Clay happened to be the closest one to the pickup truck. The driver is telling Clay to get in. Clay's not ready to do that. He doesn't know who the guy is, and the subject jumps out with a handgun.
Yeah.
Displays a handgun and takes Clay away. And as far as a weapon, you know, I've told this to my children when they were young, when they were in college, you know, my daughter, my sons. If somebody displays a weapon and they demand you get in the car, they go with them. Whatever you do, just don't do it. If you've got school books, throw them. You yell, you scratch, you kick, you fight, you make as much noise as you can. But, you know, and I'd be interested to hear what you say. But my recommendation has always been, if you let that person, kidnapper, take you,
yep,
he takes you from that location, the chances that you're going to survive get very, very slim as time goes on.
Absolutely. You yell, you scream, you draw as much attention to the scene, and then you run like hell. You get out of there because a kidnapper, a predator, whoever, does not want attention drawn to themselves. And by doing that, you're going to save yourself. If you're just tuning in, Clint Van Zandt is here, and we're talking about the Clay Moore case. This is it's miraculous. You know, who says miracles don't happen? Who knows what would have happened to this young boy duct taped to a tree way out in the middle of nowhere. You know, the ransom drop, it's not like TV. That could have turned sour. They'll probably get this Moreno guy. There's allegations that he was in the country illegally. All sorts of stuff, things that we're probably not seeing in the media. But before we turn to our next topic, Clint, I want to ask you a little bit about the, because you're a media guy now too, the media and how they've handled this story. I did a daily commentary a few days back about Clayton Moore, and I hope that the media will applaud him, but now leave him alone a little bit. Use the story to help protect others, but don't sensationalize it a little bit, because this young man will have some psychological things to go through.
Well, and I think that's the story that, you know, we looked at a couple of weeks ago too, is these two young boys in Missouri. One had been kidnapped for almost 4.5 years and one for 4.5 days, and law enforcement found them. And I mean, they get on, you know, the talk show circuit, and every news person is out there trying to get them, trying to interview them, trying to impact. Not number one, that impacts on the case. As you well know, if you get witnesses, if you get victims, and they retell and retell and retell their story, there may be a change. And all the defense is going to do is get videotapes of every TV interview, look at those, and try to poke holes in the victim, in the witness's statement. Well, you said this on NBC, but you said this on CBS.
Exactly.
So maybe you don't really know what the truth is. And as you suggest, too, the post-traumatic stress reaction, whatever we might attribute this, you know, to a victim of a kidnapping, we want to give them time to assimilate back in the community. This was something that Clay Moore's family asked today through the sheriff's office. They said, look, we know you want to talk. The family's here this morning. They're going to talk, but I tell you what, Clay wants to go back to school. The family want to get on with their life. Law enforcement will find the kidnapper, and they'll do it in a very short period of time, hopefully. But, you know, get your story and then move on. You know, I think the most fortunate thing that happened for Clay Moore today, and unfortunate for a lot of other people, is that the stock market really tanked. And that's going to be the story for the next couple of days, of the stock market tanking.
Yeah.
And public interest stories like this are going to take a back seat. And then, as you know, the media moves on to the next story, to the next tragedy. If I hear one more Anna Nicole interviews in America, I'm going to barf. No, I'm absolutely going to barf.
Yeah.
We've got wars going on in multiple countries. We've got people from all over the world dying in wars and famine. And the only thing that consumes the American media is Anna Nicole. Now, listen, let's demand a DNA test be made, swab the child, swab the half-dozen guys that say they're the father, figure out who the biological father is. Let's have custody. If that guy's got his head halfway on straight, give him custody of the child, take Anna Nicole's money, put it in a long-term investment that the father really can't get into except for a little bit of support money. Give the grandmother the opportunity to see the child, and come on, America, get on with things that really are important in the media.
Absolutely. The Vice President of the United States, there's an attempt on his life, and all we hear about is Anna Nicole today, and it just drives me around the bend. Speaking of the media, another serial killer movie is coming out, Zodiac. One that I've followed for many, many years. The Dirty Harry movies were loosely based on that.
Sure.
The whole persona of the media, and I'm going to ask you this question to see what you think, taking these stories, which are interesting, which are fascinating, and I'll see the movie, but does it glorify the serial killer in the public? Does it make it okay for something like this, or does it even encourage copycats for something like this? Your thoughts, sir?
Well, I think it does. I think it encourages copycats. I mean, you know, we can go back to, you know, the Son of Sam is playing. Some of them, the five or six that are attributed to him, took place in 68 and 69, although some suggest that he committed, you know, not five or six, but maybe 20, 30, 40, up to 50 homicides that may or may not be linked to this person who's called Zodiac. And, of course, following that, following Zodiac, about half a dozen years later, we had David Berkowitz, the so-called Son of Sam, the 44 caliber killer, who during the from the summer of 76 to the summer of 77, just absolutely terrorized New York City using a 44 caliber handgun to come up to just random people and blow them away. What I see serial killer movies normally do is they make an attempt to develop this larger than life character. They want to give someone this, you know, they want to make him like Dr. Lecter in Silence of the Lambs. Mm-hmm. They want to give them this super intellect, this capability. They're wine connoisseurs. They're what everybody would aspire to know as their best friend, and yet they're this highly successful serial killer too. And I think the reality is most of these guys are going to turn out to be, like this guy we had in Wichita, Kansas, the BTK serial killer, Dennis Rader. I mean, this guy was just, in his own way, a basic loser. And most of these guys, of course, are. So what bothers me about the movies is that we make them these larger-than-life characters, and I've interviewed killers and serial killers in the past where what they're trying to do, Dana, as you know, is they're trying to go out and get the record. They want to surpass David Berkowitz. They want to do better than Ted Bundy. They want to get their names on the serial killer record book. So, you know, I would much rather see the movies and the media and the public look at these people as they are, just sad, psychopathic killers who we need to get off the street as fast as we can and give them no 5 minutes of fame whatsoever.
Absolutely. Focus on the hardworking detectives, investigators, FBI agents, whatever, that have worked so hard to try and solve these cases and protect the public. Before I let you go, Clint, the two Border Patrol agents, Ramos and Compion, it's come back up in the news again that the drug smuggler who was given immunity and who is now considering suing the United States government was caught a second time with more drugs than what he was bringing in the first time. What's wrong with our society? Something's wrong here, and I just don't get it.
Well, I don't know if we've got politicians buying drugs from this guy or what. it makes absolutely no sense. You know, here we have men and women like yourselves and so many others. In the case of the U.S., you know, we've got these people down on the border. I mean, they're getting shot at every day by people from across the border. They're going up against semi-automatic weapons. It's a horrendous situation. Everybody in America is demanding that southern border somehow be sealed off. And when guys are trying to do their job and do it, here you have just some absolute common criminal who brought about his own that shooting situation himself. It absolutely, Dana, defies reason. And, you know, we're told that, you know, that the president has been asked to consider this case. Well, it never should have got to that level.
No.
Where is the common sense among prosecutors who would say that, hey, we pay these people, they're doing the best job they can, there was a shooting situation to take place. You know, by and large, and, you know, some of your listeners may screw them in the ceiling, but my position is if we can trust a police officer, a Border Patrol agent, an FBI agent to carry a gun, and if we've got nothing that said they shouldn't do it, and we've got two different stories, their story and the story of a bad guy criminal, I'm going to take that cop's word until he proves to me that he's incorrect, that he can't be trusted. And if we don't trust him, take away the badge and take away the gun. Otherwise, let these guys do their job and back them up.
Yep, we're trying to encourage. I'm to the point where my career is almost over, but we're trying to encourage and get people interested in protecting our borders, protecting life and property. And when something like this happens, when two Border Patrol agents are sacrificed the way that they are, what drug dealer that's bringing in $1 million worth of drugs into a country illegally isn't armed? That argument to say that he didn't have a gun is so ridiculous, it's unbelievable. But anyway, that's another story for another time. Clint Van Zandt, thank you, sir.
Dana, thank you. God bless.
Thank you. Bye-bye. That's Clint Van Zandt, former FBI agent, author, and again, go to livesecure.org, livesecure.org, and get Clint's free, that's F-R-E-E, CD about how you can protect yourself and your family. We'll be right back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio, the Dana Pretzer Show. ¶¶ Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll see if this is a call for me. No, it's my kid calling. I should put my daughter on the air sometime. You'd probably get a kick out of her. She's going to university in the beautiful state of North Dakota. So what I will invite you to do now in the last 5 minutes of the show is call me. Tell me what you think of our topics tonight. 1-306-842-7884. 1-306-842-7884. You can call the show and talk about anything you like. You know, Clint Van Zandt, he just nails it when he comes on. And that's why I like having him as a guest, because he doesn't pull any punches. If we can't support our law enforcement, then who can we support? If we can't protect our children at a bus stop, for heaven's sakes, then we're in big trouble. But can we put a policeman on every bus stop? Can we put a policeman in every schoolyard and parents? Well, you can try. But remember some of those safety tips that Clint passed along, because we have to protect our children. There are predators out there. And sadly, there are some jurisdictions that don't have the courage to sentence some of these predators to jail, and they roam the streets after committing crimes or entering the country illegally and shouldn't be there in the first place, and they roam around. I'm not saying that all predators are illegal aliens, but a lot of them shouldn't be in the country in the first place, and something's wrong with the system. Something's wrong with the system when you have two Border Patrol agents who are doing their job. Yeah, there may be an administrative thing. They picked up their shell casings or never filed a report, whatever. Deal with that. But an 11 and a 12-year sentence for shooting a drug smuggler he's drug smuggled twice with millions of dollars worth of narcotics, giving him immunity, now allowing him to sue the United States, and probably they'll settle out of court with this guy. And these Border Patrol agents who don't get paid squat anyway, who are putting their lives on the line every day to protect the border, are in jail for long periods of time, being assaulted by the people that they put in jail for shooting a drug smuggler in their rear end. Okay? There's something wrong with society. Who do you believe in a situation like this? The prosecutor that wants to persecute the law enforcement officer for doing their job? Shame on you. Yes, there are law enforcement officers that aren't doing their jobs the way that they should be, but that's for another day and another time and another story. We're talking about two Border Patrol agents. Yes, there was a jury, but was all the evidence presented to the jury? Should the President of the United States pardon these two Border Patrol agents? I think he should, but it shouldn't never have got that far, like Clint Van Zandt says in the first place. Okay. 1-306-842-7884. I got about a minute and a half left if you want to sneak a call in. I want to thank my guests for joining me tonight and remind you that our webpage is located at www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio. That's www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio. There you can listen to the show live. You can download podcasts, listen to my daily commentary, or pick up shows from the past. It's just that simple. Thanks to those of you that listen on the podcast. Thanks to those of you that listen on satellite W3957 or on Trust Cable Channel 46 in Alabama or wherever you can pick us up. Our next show will be Tuesday, March 6th at 9 o'clock Eastern. How many of you remember the TV show My Three Sons? My kids were growing up and they loved it. When I was growing up, I loved it. While Stanley Livingston, who played Chip on My Three Sons, will be my guest next week, Tuesday, March 6th at 9 p.m. Eastern. And we're going to talk about a project that he has called the Actor's Journey Project. Okay? To protect young actors, to protect families who are wanting to get their children into acting, the Actor's Journey Project will help you with that. He has a series of DVDs, and he's going to come on the program next week, Tuesday, March 6th at 9 o'clock Eastern, to talk about the Actor's Journey Project, and I'm really looking forward to that. That's Chip Stanley Livingston from My Three Sons fame, a child actor himself, will join me here on the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Thank you. I appreciate you being here. Good night.
the same way, only in different areas.
Love me tender, love me sweet, never let me go. You have made my